This is Mark Steiner, and that's Max Roach. Max Roach, one of the greatest drummers and composers in jazz and American history, died on this day in 2007. So we'll hear a little bit of his magnificent work during the course of the next couple of hours. On our way to our day in history and to our conversation in Cairo, I want to remind you that WEAA is made possible in part by AAA Mid-Atlantic. More information at 866-4-GLASS-1. On this day in history, August the 16th, as I said, in 2007, Max Roach passed away. His Freedom Now suite and more was just, he was one of the most amazing, thoughtful, powerful composers and drummers in our history. But on this day, in 1888, T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, as he is known in the American world, in the Western world, was born. In 1894, George Meany was born, founding AFL-CIO president. On this day, the great American poet and wild man, Charles Bukowski, was born in 1920. This was a day in 1922 that Louis Lomax, a great American author, who actually was the man who created the world that was made famous by Malcolm X's conversations on ABC News. He's the one who actually did it. He never really got credit for it. This is a day when James Cameron was born in 1954, who made the movie Avatar. This is the day that Madonna was born, and the great actress, one of my favorites, Angela Bassett, was born on this day in 1958. We'll also be hearing music today by Robert Johnson, the great bluesmaster, who died on this day in 1938. Babe Ruth, the great baseball player, who died on this day in 1948, as did Bela Lugosi, the actor, in 1956. And Elvis Presley died on this day in 1977. Many people liked Elvis' music. Many people hated Elvis' music. But if it wasn't for black folks in America, he wouldn't have had any music. But he died on this day in 1977. This was the day that Idi Amin died, the Ugandan leader and dictator, in 2003. On this day in 1792, Maximilien de Robespierre put a petition before the Commune of Paris demanding the revolutionary tribute begin. It was the beginning of the great revolutionary period of the 19th century with the Haitians, Americans, and the French. This is a day that we talk about what's going on in Egypt, but we realize throughout history things like this have happened. In 1841, John Tyler, who was president of the United States, decided not to establish the Second Bank of the United States. And the Whig Party, his opposition, rioted, killing people outside the White House. In 1858, this is the first day that the telegraph went across the ocean between the United States and Britain, President James Buchanan talking to Queen Victoria. Even though it ended a few days later because the signal was weak, it was the beginning of a great technological revolution that changed the nature of communications that began on this day in 1858. Demonstrations began in 1914, thousands and thousands of people demonstrating against World War I and America going into World War I. On this day, given the negotiations going on now, remember in 1929 that riots took place between Arabs and Jews in the land of Palestine. 133 Jews and 116 Arabs were killed on that day. This is also the day that in 1963, in the midst of the civil rights struggle, that a stamp was issued remembering the 100th anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. And in 1966, during the Vietnam War, the House Un-American Activities Committee investigated people who, they say, aided the Viet Cong, the National Liberation Front of South Vietnam. And demonstrations took place on that day. And it was we'll do more about that in another show soon. In 1970, on this day, activist Angela Davis was sent out for her arrest because of George Jackson's attempted escape from San Quentin prison, alleged escape, and her alleged involvement. She was later acquitted. That's this day in history, August the 16th. We now turn our attention to what's going on today in Egypt. We've been all following very closely. Once again, Shahira Amin, a former deputy head of Nile TV, former contributor to CNN, Egyptian journalist, joins us from Cairo. Shahira, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. It's good to be back on your show again.
I think our Skype connection is a little worse. Let's try this one more time. But Shahira, let me say, let me try that one more time and see if your Skype sounds better. If not, we'll just call you back by phone.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, Shahira.
Well, I'm on the phone, yes.
Good. Okay, we got you. Wonderful. So, Shahira, let me start. I mean, I think that we've been following this news. We've seen at least 525 people, Muslim Brotherhood supporters and police, were killed, thousands more injured. And I know that you're safe, which is good. But this is, I could tell from the conversations we had the other day and you had with our producers, this is a very powerful, painful, emotional moment for you and for, I think, people across Egypt.
Yes, actually, today is the Friday of anger. The Muslim Brotherhood supporters have called for mass rallies to be held across the country. They've called for what they say will be million people marches. And the marches did take off after Friday noon prayers here from various mosques across Cairo. They are in downtown Cairo now. Not just Muslim Brotherhood supporters, but other moderate Muslims, liberal Egyptians, who are, you know, they've woken up because of Wednesday's massacre, the brutal security crackdown to disperse forcibly the two major sit-ins in Cairo. That was a wake-up call for Egyptians that this is a brutal military dictatorship. And a lot of people are joining these protests just very angry because of the level of violence, because of the deaths and the bloodshed that we've seen in recent days.
Shahira, that's interesting that you describe it the way you've just described it, because the other day when we spoke in our conversations, one of the things you were so taken aback by was the fact that after this first attack on the Muslim Brotherhood in Cairo, that the liberal forces, the secular forces, the more moderate forces were almost gleeful in the attack and the getting rid of Morsi. But you're saying that's changing now?
It's changing gradually. Wednesday was a wake-up call, that horrific massacre. But you still find the majority of Egyptian liberals, leftists and Christians refusing or blinded, really, to the truth. And that's because of the media here, which has adopted the state line, glorifying the military. And a lot of people have taken the attitude of you are either with us or against us. There is a great deal of intolerance, very little compassion for Muslim Brotherhood supporters. And I think, honestly, that a lot of people are blinded by their hatred and distrust of the Islamist group. For decades, Mubarak portrayed them as the bogeyman. And Morsi didn't do a very good job himself. They would say something and then do something else. They would promise they wouldn't field a presidential candidate, and they did. They would promise not to get a majority in parliament, and they did. So they were always saying one thing and doing something else. So there is a lot of distrust and fear, really, fear of the other.
One of one of our listeners, Stephen Merkel, wrote in on our Facebook page, Shahira, asking the question, I hope you talk about the burning of 17 churches. Didn't get any air on the networks. I think tomorrow will be even worse. What about the burning of churches? What about the conflict between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Christian community?
We've had sectarian issues for decades now, and all governments in Egypt have actually buried their heads in the sand, not wanting to acknowledge that there were simmering tensions between the majority Muslim population and Egypt's 10 to 12% Christian population. But we've had sporadic sectarian clashes erupting every now and then. They have intensified and increased after the January revolution. But look at what happened under Mubarak. We witnessed several attacks on churches, and it was later found out that these were instigated by the state. So it's very difficult to know who is really behind them. Muslim Brotherhood supporters say they are peaceful. In fact, a lot of Muslim Brotherhood youth today, as I speak to you now, are forming human chains to protect churches in Cairo and in the south, just to show that, you know, it's not us that are burning these churches. But also, we cannot deny that there is a lot of anger. A lot of Christians took part in the June 30th rebellion that toppled the Islamist president, Mohamed Morsi. So there is a lot of anger at the stance that the Christians had taken against the Islamists, and especially in the south, where there's a lot of ignorance and poverty. So we cannot rule out, you know, that this torching of churches could have been carried out by Muslim Brotherhood supporters. But the state is out to tarnish the image of the Islamists. The government wants to crush the Muslim Brotherhood altogether. And so it could be, you know, thugs sent or hired by the police.
And I think it's important here, I mean, because the way you're describing this, we've talked about this before, the whole idea of the deep state in Egypt, and that the earlier we saw the people who were, again, for want of a better term, on the left, more secular liberals and Christians and liberal Muslim, more moderate Muslim groups who were kind of attacking Mubarak. The Muslim Brotherhood came in later in those demonstrations to kind of push the Mubarak regime out. But pushing the Mubarak regime out didn't mean that all the people around Mubarak, the deep state, didn't still control everything. And that's what you've talked so eloquently about in the past. And I think this divide going on now between the more secular parts of, for want of a better term, of Egyptians and the Muslim Brotherhood, the real winner here is neither one. And that's why it's so kind of sad seeing everybody blinded by this, because it's the state that wins this in the end.
Absolutely. Well, the secularist-Islamist battle has been going on for decades in this country. And I think the biggest fear of Egypt's liberals was that an Islamist regime would alter the identity of Egypt as a moderate contemporary state. I think that was the biggest concern and the biggest fear. When we look at what happens now, we have come a full cycle back to pre-January 2011 days. The emergency law has been reimposed, allowing for arbitrary arrests and detentions of civilians without charge. We had a state of emergency for 30 years under Mubarak. The interim government says that this is temporary, it's only for a month, but you know, with the state of things, you know, with all the violence, I think this may very well be extended. They have reinstated the detested state security services, and they have formed committees to monitor religious activities. So I see this as even worse than the Mubarak reign. It's back to the brutal police state.
And finally, Shahira, let me just ask you about this kind of the kind of unprecedented nature of the violence on Tuesday, which did not take place under Mubarak or really Nasser, and the possible effect and impact on the national psyche of Egyptians as a whole.
Actually, Egyptians are still reeling from the shock of what happened here on Wednesday. It was Wednesday, Mark, not Tuesday.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
It started early in the morning and lasted for about 9 hours, forcibly breaking up the sit-ins that had continued for over a month and a half. I was just speaking to members of the Muslim Brotherhood over the phone this morning. One woman, you know, wept and said exactly what you just said, that this didn't happen under Mubarak, who was a dictator himself, a soft one at that. It didn't happen under Nasser. She says, we've never seen this horrific level of violence. And there are videos out on YouTube today showing, you know, how snipers on rooftops shooting people in the heads, in the chests, children, teenagers, and these were unarmed protesters, contrary to what the interim government has been telling Egyptians, that these were dangerous armed protesters. They're even calling them terrorists. They were just exercising their right to protest peacefully. Ironically, Morsi himself was toppled by means of peaceful protests in Tahrir Square. So these people were just demanding a return to legitimacy, the reinstatement of a democratically elected president, and, you know, they felt they had the same right to express their views and their grievances.
Shahir Anbil, once again, thank you so much for taking your time with the listeners. Joining us from Cairo, please be safe. I hope your family stays safe, and we'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you so much. Shahir Amin, former head of the Nile TV, former contributor to CNN. Just to understand, Shahira has been a major figure in media in Cairo for a long time, herself coming from the Christian community with a very broad view of where the world is. So it's always a pleasure to have her on. I hope she and her family remain safe, as do our other friends in Cairo.